The Jason Rantz Show.
Jason Rantz hosts a radio show in Seattle, and he has, as always, the details for us exclusively.
Jason Rantz, our Seattle guy, is with us now.
Jason Rantz, always great to have you in focus. Thank you.
Hey, Jason, I think you're all right, and thanks for being on the show.
An update on what's happening in your Pacific Northwest.
Gun buyback programs don't actually lessen crime. So why exactly are we spending so much money across Washington state doing it? Dave Workman from the Second Amendment Foundation stops by to explain. We'll speak with Congressman Andy Biggs in response to the terrifying politicization of the Justice Department, now the legal system out of New York. He will explain the ramifications of the Trump indictment. Plus, State Representative Dan Griffey, he points out Democrat drug policy, it's killing people, and it's going to get worse. How? He'll explain on this hour of the Jason Rantz Show. So, let's dive in.
The monologue.
Well, it seems like the Trump indictment story allowed a lot of media outlets to kind of move on already from the Nashville mass shooting. Yeah, they'll talk a little bit about gun control, but they're definitely going to use this all the breaking news around Donald Trump and the spectacle that will come of it, they're going to use that to further bury the fact that the shooter's gender identity may have played a role in what it is she decided to do in the murder, the targeted murder of three children and three staff members over at Covenant School in Nashville. Yeah, 3 9-year-old kids murdered. And somehow, no one wants to talk about the shooter anymore. And when they do talk about it, they keep some crucial information away. Now, when it comes to a white shooter with a MAGA hat, it's white supremacy. When it comes to a white officer who shoots and kills a black suspect who was armed at the time, who was robbing a bank at the time, regardless of the situation, the context, you have it framed as a white cop shoots a black man. And yet, in this case, no one wants to talk about the transgender identity, because trans people are a quote-unquote marginalized community. Thus, you should never say anything negative towards them, even though I think most people, when you say a transgender shooter, no one says, well, that means all transgender people are shooters. No one holds that belief. But if you're CBS News, apparently you order your staff not to use the term transgender. Fox News has a report, so does the New York Post. They're saying that and this is quoting a memo from CBS editors, you know, leadership to its reporters and news staff. The shooter's gender identity has not been confirmed by CBS News. As such, we should avoid any mention of it, as it has no known relevance to the crime. Should that change, we can and will revisit. The memo continued, right now we advise saying police identified the suspect as a 28-year-old Audrey Hale, who they shot and killed at the scene, and move on to focus on other important points of the investigation, community, and solutions. Oh, solutions. You mean gun control. Now, the directive was issued on Tuesday morning, we find out, by CBS News Vice President Ingrid Cyprian Matthews, along with the Senior Vice President for Standards and Practices, Claudia Milne. Now, when you go back and you watch how they covered it, initially they said that authorities revealed the transgender identity. That's how they reported it on Monday. But when it came to Tuesday and Wednesday, when you go back and you look at the transcripts of the news products, they did not say anything. No gender identity. CBS News anchor Nora O'Donnell used female pronouns on Tuesday night, but that's about it. There has been an effort that I think is pretty clear, pretty obvious, to either deflect from the shooter being transgender or almost justify it. And then beyond that, you've got the bizarre response claiming, implying, sometimes just being pretty explicit, saying that the transgender community, that's the community that is hurting right now. They're the victims. Transgender community isn't a victim. The Christian community in Nashville, they're the victims. The school community, they're the victims. trans community in Nashville or the greater United States, not a victim here. Now, Kiko McCracken, she's the family and community engagement coordinator, as well as the gender inclusive schools coordinator for the Anacortes School District. Oh, she even has a third title, administrative assistant for inclusive services. She sent out an email today because it is Transgender Day of Visibility. Tomorrow's Transgender Day of Vengeance, but today is a day of visibility. And she writes in this email that was forwarded to me by a parent, with the increasingly perilous legal and social landscape affecting trans youth, and the ugly narrative spouted by some media voices regarding the Nashville shooting, I humbly ask you, take special notice today of the trans and non-binary students at our schools. Okay, yeah, thanks. Got it. What media narrative is being, what media voices are doing anything nasty towards transgender people beyond simply saying that the shooter was transgender? They want to keep that information from you. And when someone wants to keep some information from you, usually a bad sign. Usually a sign that they're, well, they're trying to hide something a little bit more serious than you might think. Now this.
The interview.
We keep seeing cities all around the state, and really all around the country, participate in these gun buyback programs, but they seem to be wholly ineffective, at least as it relates to cutting down on crime, which is precisely the reason why they're doing them in the first place. Joining me on the line is Dave Workman from the Second Amendment Foundation. Welcome back to the show.
Well, thanks for having me. This is a situation I've been writing about, I think, for years. Gun buybacks, they make great headlines. They look good on television. But you're right, they don't accomplish very much at all. And even some of the gun control people have admitted that.
Yeah, it turns out that the criminals who are using guns don't turn them in. Shocking, I know. Well,
I know. I lose sleep every night wondering about that. But, you know, seriously, it just makes no sense at all. When you look actually at the newsreel footage and at photographs of some of these guns that are turned in, no self-respecting criminal is going to be walking around with, say, a 22 caliber rifle that has been gathering dust in grandpa's closet for 40 years. Or a broken shotgun, or some of the other stuff that typically turns up at these gun buybacks. And it gives the people who conduct these buybacks a great opportunity to say, hey, look, we're doing something. Even the newsreel says so, but in reality, it hasn't done a thing at all. The crime stats seem to back that up.
Yeah, crime is getting worse, and they're getting worse, including in the places in which they're doing the gun buyback programs. I speculated this week that I think part of the reason why it's being done is to send a message about gun culture and gun owners and basically imply that gun ownership is dangerous. You need to get rid of your guns. What do you make of that?
Well, you might be getting warm on that. The gun prohibition lobby has been losing in court. In fact, they just lost another one in court Friday morning when a Minnesota federal judge back there ruled that state's prohibition on allowing concealed carry by young adults 18 to 20 years old is unconstitutional. I'm actually working on a story about that right now, and it's going to be posted at the Gun Mag a little later in Friday afternoon. This sort of thing is, I think, maybe a grasp at something. The Bruin ruling last year by the U.S. Supreme Court really opened the door to a lot of challenges of some of these restrictive gun laws around the country. And the fact that Joe Biden even admitted earlier this week that he's run out of steam and certainly authority to be pushing any gun control executive decisions. All of this stuff now is in the hands of the Congress, and I don't think the Congress, especially with the Republicans in control of the House, is going to be very cooperative with any of his gun-grabbing schemes.
There are gun-grabbing schemes here in Washington State, though, and we don't have Republicans who have control of the House. House Bill 1240 already passed through the House. It passed through a Senate committee on, I believe it was Tuesday of this week.
Right.
This gets basically bans a long list of guns. And some of the lawmakers had the audacity to compare what they're doing to what should have been done to prevent another Nashville mass shooting. They're using those victims to try to justify taking away guns in Washington State, where we don't have a problem with so-called quote-unquote assault weapons.
Well, yeah, and of course, as I say, they're grasping at every straw they can get their hands on. And I think the reason for that is going to become quite apparent after they publish the manifesto that this woman used or left behind after she was killed back there in the school. And I think it's important to put this in perspective. You know, they're claiming, the people who are supporting 1240, for example, they're claiming this is going to stop so much gun violence, and it's going to help us reduce the number of killings done by these terrible assault weapons. And that's nonsense. If you look at some of the stories that I've written in the last couple of months about how gun control in Washington State has been an abject failure over the last 6 or 7 years, and look at the FBI uniform crime reports for those years and get the real data, the number of murders in this state has gone up, not down, since the gun control crowd got the backing of some billionaires and started passing these initiatives. None of this stuff is going in the right direction. We have a mental health problem in this country, maybe. We've got a problem with prosecutors who just don't even slap the wrist.
But that's a significant issue. Isn't that the biggest issue here?
You bet it is.
We're talking about criminals who many times they have long rap sheets. They're committing gun crime after gun crime after gun crime. They're not being put in jail. And if they are, they get very low sentences. So this idea that they have to go after you and me and my listeners to protect folks from gun violence, it's just false. And we never get that kind of coverage from the media. They just uncritically print quotes about, oh, if you want to stop the next Nashville or Uvalde, you're going to have to do this. Sorry, but we don't have those happening here. And even if we did, it doesn't mean we just give away our rights to bear arms. You look at the policies that are in place. You see whether or not they are doing enough to mitigate potential risk in a reasonable way, one that is constitutional. But they never do that. We just say, oh, no, this is to protect people. Go ahead and support the ban.
Yeah, that's right, Jason. You've got it pegged. These people, it's all flash and really no substance. And if you look at the things that they haven't accomplished, that's really what's the most important in this whole debate. It's what the gun control crowd and the gun control proponents in Olympia and Washington, D.C. and other state capitals, what they have not accomplished. That's the real story here. And unfortunately, our colleagues in the media seem to want to ignore that. As I say, it makes good flash to do newsreel footage of a bunch of people bringing in a bunch of broken guns and maybe getting a grocery store card or some other kind of credit card, or they can go to Starbucks or someplace.
Here's and, a latte for your Glock.
Yeah, it doesn't accomplish a thing because the bad guys sit out there and they just laugh at this sort of thing.
They do. Oh, we are seeing an increase in crime while we're trying to take away one's right to protect themselves. It's absurd. TheGunMag.com. Head on over there right now. You can get a lot of the wonderful work that Dave Workman does. TheGunMag.com. Dave Workman from the Second Amendment Foundation. Thanks for stopping by.
Always a pleasure, Jason.
Now this.
The interview.
Perhaps a lot of folks who are celebrating a political persecution against President Donald Trump doesn't understand the implications in the long term. Someone who does is joining me on the line. Congressman Andy Biggs, Republican from Arizona. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Jason. Good to be with you.
What do you think this does to the legal system in this country long term?
I actually think that it harms it, because we've already seen the weaponization of the of the judicial system, Department of Justice, excuse me. But this judicial branch and this prosecution, so with some of the other incidents that have happened, I think it may cross the Rubicon. I mean, some people have been saying that. I just think it leads us to an existential crisis, crossroads, that right here, you're going to go one way or the other. And we either reject this and go back to the rule of law, or we will see increasing use of the prosecutorial system to go after perceived political opponents and adversaries.
What does it mean to reject it?
To reject it means this summarily gets dismissed when it gets challenged in court, which it will be by the Trump team. And then it will require voices on the Democrat side to stand up and say, this is unacceptable. If they don't do that, then it becomes a huge problem.
Well, so far they've rejected any sort of comment. We've got both from the president and the vice president saying that they're not going to comment on this. So to your point, a good leader actually would step up and say that this is wrong, regardless of the politics involved. I think there are some people who could justify this level of politicization by simply saying, well, it's just for Donald Trump. We all know they hate Donald Trump. He has broken a lot of people. But of course, they're not going to do it to anyone other than Donald Trump. That is such a dangerous way to think, because if they're willing to do it to Trump, they're going to be willing to do it to anyone that they perceive to be a danger to their power.
Absolutely right. What's happening is you've opened the door to license for this conduct. And it isn't like this is a pristine setup. This is a setup that has gone through DOJ. It's gone through other prosecutorial agencies who said, no, there's nothing here. But somehow this guy is going to take it and turn around. And that's what makes it particularly pernicious. And I'm just afraid, quite frankly, that the voices are being silent on the Democrat side that have to speak up. And until people speak up on the left side and say, look, because we know, Jason, they hate Donald Trump.
Yep.
This has been their cause to get him. They want to get him. And that's why they've persecuted him. They don't want to see him run for president again, et cetera. But this is actually going to give license for additional politicized prosecutions.
Do you think Republicans are doing enough to speak up?
Yeah, I don't know a single Republican who hasn't been speaking up, Jason. So they're there, but I don't think speaking up's just enough. I do think that there's going to have to be some. The Congress has got to look in, and if this continues, you have to do what we can, and that means things like defund the New York City DA or whatever if they're getting stuff from the federal government. The federal government has just basically got to say, no, we're not going to participate in this.
Well, what's ironic about this, you've got Alvin Bragg responding to House Republicans looking to investigate whether or not this was done for political purposes, saying that they should stay out because they are treating this like it's political. I mean, just the temerity of a guy to say something like that. It's just it is just so remarkable. And it's almost like a big joke to them.
Yeah, it is. I couldn't help. I was thinking when I heard about this, I was on the plane last night when the news broke, and you know, now you can. I was on the internet and I saw it, and I couldn't help thinking of Saul Alinsky, and you know, the satanic prophet of radical leftism, mm-hmm. and you start looking at it, and one of his tenets is to go after the individual, go after their head. And that's what they've been doing now since Donald Trump came down the golden escalator. And you begin looking at it, they don't care. There is no principle moorings, no moral moorings on the left when it comes to going after their objectives, which is basically to remake the U.S. into a kind of a Marxist authoritarian state. So that's what happens. And so there's nobody that's willing to stand up, because the means justify the ends, or the ends justify the means. I guess that's the way you say it. The ends justify the means. They're trying to get someplace. They don't care how they get there.
They don't seem to care how they get there, and they don't seem to care how many institutions they pervert or break in the process, and there's going to be collateral damage here. What do you think happens over the course of the next few days with the president's base, with his supporters? There seems to be, and I made this point on Tucker Carlson earlier this week, seems to be a push almost to egg on Trump supporters to commit acts of violence in response.
I think that's right. I think that they would like to have Trump supporters act with violence. I would anticipate some kinds of protests. I hope they're peaceful, but my guess is there's going to be instigators in there who want to turn any gathering into a violent event. And then they'll say, well, see there, that's what happens when the right gets out. But they won't bother to mention what happened in Tennessee. They won't bother to mention any Antifa BLM riots. It'll be all focused on the right, and that always hurts us. I mean, we're still dealing with January 6th innuendo, when in the reality we should have moved on. If the riots of January 6th hadn't happened, I think we would have really catalyzed our movement even further. But the left has basically said they're going to weaponize every institution, including the media, with their help from the media. By the way, somebody retweeted or reused one of my posts today, and Facebook said, you know, that's bad content because I compared Bill Clinton's $850,000 payment to Paula Jones with this. You know, they said, oh yeah, that's bad. That's bad. We got to suppress that. So
jeez.
Every institution, Jason, every institution is controlled by the left. And that didn't happen overnight. That's happened over a couple generations.
So Facebook took it down?
Yeah, Facebook stopped it.
Did they give any reason? Yeah. What was the bogus reason they gave you?
They said because when I tweeted out, I said it was similar to – I didn't say it was the same. I said it was similar to – they said that that was an unjustified metaphor, simile, whatever you want to call that
comparison,
you know, analogy.
Oh, yeah, wow. That is
right,
absolutely insane. I mean, technically, yeah, they're right. It's not fair because, as you know, Democrats get special treatment and Republicans don't. We've been talking with Congressman Andy Biggs, Republican from Arizona. Thank you so much for stopping by.
Jason, always. Thanks. Take care.
Thank you. You're listening to The Jason Rant Show. Now this. Democrats have shown no interest in getting the drug crisis under control. And unfortunately, their Blake fix, Blake, the decision by the Supreme Court, basically legalizing the possession of drugs, well, it could possibly get worse than it is now. Joining me on the line is State Representative Dan Griffey, Republican from Allen. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, Jason, how are you?
I'm doing fine, though. It feels like maybe I'm high on drugs because Democrats seem to be going even more backwards than I thought they would go.
Well, Jason, the bill has some good things in it. 23-hour crisis receiving facilities. They have more SUD treatment options if we fund it, right, in the future. The problem is they miss on many areas, in that even those with substance abuse disorders have to be held accountable. I'm a believer in Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and Hiram Maslow thinks, and I think he's right, he was a psychologist, that self-actualization, or all humans have to achieve or look for, is self-actualization. And what this misses is that we think that people are just going to get better on their own. They're going to make up their mind to get better. And what we have to do as a state is assist them getting better, even if it means civil and criminal penalties.
Mm-hmm. And we've heard from Democrats for a while now that they're not interested in that, right? I mean, they, in fairness to the Democrats, they haven't hid their position. They are openly saying we don't want to, quote unquote, criminalize addiction. They don't want the criminal justice system involved at all.
Yeah, but the behavior is always excused as well.
Yeah.
And what we can't do is, if somebody is down in society, we can't have a system, I don't think so, that shows no love whatsoever, where we're used to stepping over people most in need. And what this bill does is perpetuate that. And I'm just tired of it. I think we as a society can step up to the plate and we can help people most in need, and we can help them become productive members of society and start climbing that ladder of needs that I mentioned.
You say the bill that's being discussed right now, at least what's come of the bill that's being discussed, it will lead to more deaths, right?
Absolutely. 911's still going to be called.
Yep.
When law enforcement or fire or EMS shows up, they're still going to have nothing to do for them because this is all voluntary. There is no civil penalties where we're saying, you know, you're, you know, high and you're walking in the middle of I-5. We think that, you know, you need to have treatment and you need to get better. There's no teeth. If we put them in a treatment, they voluntarily go in. They can just check themselves out. And the substance abuse problem, the monkey that's on their back, is so hard to get off their back that at 3 days into treatment, we see most of the time with voluntary treatment, they just leave and they don't finish the program.
Well, what's also alarming is what happens to folks who, let's say, they agree to a pretrial drug diversion program and they just choose to stop going. This bill would limit when the prosecuting attorney could actually just move forward and finally put someone in jail.
Well, this bill doesn't contemplate that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, well, it does.
It's the opposite. Yeah.
Nothing's going to happen.
Exactly.
Nothing's going to happen. So there is no accountability. And I think even people in pain, we need to do the respect to give them the respect to say, hey, we're going to hold you accountable for society's rules and norms. It doesn't do them any good to just excuse the behavior and watch them die. As a professional firefighter for over 30 years, my job was always to save lives, and the state gets in the way of that quite often.
Where's the disconnect?
Well, Jason, there is just a fundamental belief here, and you know, there's a lot of the colleagues that I really like that believe it. They just believe this is addiction is a disorder, a physical and mental disorder, and they shouldn't be held accountable when they commit crimes because they have a disorder. Well, no, that doesn't help people.
Exactly.
That doesn't help people that are victims of the crime, and it certainly doesn't help people who are like absolutely languishing with addiction as the thing that's holding them back.
But I guess I just don't understand how they look at the data and don't see a crisis, or at least don't see that the approach they're taking is failing. I would love to ask them directly, but they're too scared to come on and have a conversation about this, mostly because they know they don't have any data to back up their position. We've leaned into a permissive drug culture, and we've clearly seen a surge, a historic surge, in fatal overdoses.
Oh, absolutely. You know, when I first started my career, we used to give the Narcan, the drug that counteracts the opioid overdoses, we used to give it a lot because it was part of our protocol. Anytime you found somebody unconscious, you gave it. Then we stopped giving it for almost 20 years. We're giving it so much now we can't keep it on the bus. And that's every jurisdiction in the state of Washington saying that. We really have a problem, and it is crisis level. And fentanyl is just something we can't trifle with. We're talking about Mexican drug cartels. We're talking about big deals here, and lots of money to be made.
Where do we go from here?
Well, I think we continue to talk, and that's what I do, is continue to talk, and I continue to tell them that when you look at your studies that say that it's better to treat people that want to be treated. Yes, I'm not going to lie. It's easier to get people better if they come seeking help. However, if you read further on in those studies, it also says if you stick with them, and that's why we'd like to have some criminal sanctions or civil sanctions for a period of time, if you stick with them for about 2 years, you can actually compel people to be better. And that's the thing that we need to get out there. There is other bodies of work that we can reference, not just the ones that rationalize or justify what you think the studies say. It's going to be a longer conversation. I'm going to continue to be pushing on it because I want to save people. I don't want a society. I don't want to live in a society where we just step over people most in need. I want there to be resources, and I want us to come out and help them.
We're talking with State Representative Dan Griffey, Republican from Allen. Does it ever feel like these conversations are futile?
Sometimes, but you know, I my mission in life has always been to restart hearts that are not beating, to preserve life, no matter what their circumstance is, and I won't stop because I believe it is worth it.
It just seems rather ironic that the position folks on the left are taking here seems to me to be rather heartless. But we wish you obviously the best of luck in this. At the same time, we've got the ban on vehicular pursuits, same scenario we find ourselves in then with the drug bill, which is it's not really going to do anything. There's not going to be any change.
No, it won't be. And to be honest with you, you know, there is some here in Olympia that keep saying that crime is not on an uptick.
They're
quote
lying.
Weird statistics. That is an absolute fabrication. All violent crime is on a trajectory that we don't want to see. It is we're talking double digit increases, murder, you know, violent assault, rape, you know, everything that we want to, as a civil society wants to see us progress in the opposite direction. They're all on a rocket trajectory. And yeah, these policies aren't going to help.
Why do you think the voters put up with this? Because you're dealing with a lot of lawmakers who have been there a long time, some recently reelected.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't know, Jason. I think the issue is when you listen to the ad campaigns and that kind of thing, when people tell you the things you don't want to hear that doesn't sound right, doesn't sound good, we go with the touchy-feely campaigns. And it just makes us feel better instantly. But I, you know, I was always taught in my family that, you know, this is our sacred inheritance. That is our rights and freedoms and participation in this government, right? And I'm asking people that listen to your show, that listen around, be more participatory, be there, understand that all elections have consequences. I mean, right now, some of the biggest consequences is we don't pay, as a society, enough attention to judicial races.
Mm-hmm.
We don't, you know, the people that let somebody in my district, we had somebody that shot an individual four times. That person thankfully lived, just got out of Harborview, but the judge let her out on $5,000 bail.
Jeez.
How could that happen? How is that even moving the needle? And there's some excuse that, well, you know, unreasonable bail in Washington State. Well, you, judge, have the obligation to weigh the facts as you see them. And if she admits that she shot somebody four times, she could shoot somebody else four times, judge. You have to keep her. Sadly, she ended up committing suicide last week, jumping off the steel bridge in Shelton.
Yeah, and I was just in Shelton, as you know. I spoke to so many people at the event, the Lincoln Day fundraiser for the county Republicans, and every single person who came up to me made a reference to this case, to this story. And, you know, when we say Seattle policies spread and Seattle decisions spread, this is exactly what we're talking about. No one expects in Mason County, Benton County, Thurston County, you're going to get these kinds of decisions. But, you know, someone wakes up one day and they live in Republic and all of a sudden they're like, wait a minute, we've got a problem here that I only thought happened in Seattle.
Yes, unfortunately, Seattle politics spreads, and we do everything we can in my enclave to stop it. But it's a losing battle, but we continue to fight, and my district's not going to go without a fight.
Well, I'm glad you're putting up that fight, and I hope people will join you in the political fight and showing up, making sure that your voices are heard. You've got some power here. And if the lawmakers in Olympia are going to ignore you, okay, well, then make sure your voice is in front of your neighbors and your family and your friends and making sure they understand what's on the line the next time there's an election. We've been talking with State Representative Dan Griffey, the Republican out of Allen. Thank you so much for stopping by. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Jason. Appreciate it.
You're listening to The Jason Rant Show.
We'll be right back. The Jason Rantz Show.
Let's bring in our man in the Pacific Northwest, KTTH, Seattle talk radio host Jason Rantz. Great to have you with us to tell people a little bit more about this.
Jason Rantz is in focus now.
Jason Rantz, thank you for your reporting on that.
The quick hit.
So before we head on into the weekend and we deal with whatever might come out of the Trans Day of Vengeance tomorrow in D.C., which is a foolish and absolutely ridiculous movement that should be ashamed of itself. The people who are involved should be ashamed to do that and call it that. But before we go into the weekend, I really, really want to underscore a point that Andy Biggs and I spoke about this hour and the ramifications, the consequences of taking the justice system and being so blatantly political. I mean, when you go after Donald Trump, make sure you have an actual case. They didn't do that here. And part of the reason is they don't care. They don't. There was a tweet that Nancy Pelosi posted yesterday. One tweet amongst many from the Democrats pretending this is a somber moment for the United States. This brings me no joy to see former President Donald Trump get indicted. This is a sad day for the presidency and a sad day for America. But we are upholding our democratic values to stay as a democracy. No one is above the law, except for Democrats, of course, but no one else is above the law. Okay, got it. But I think it was Nancy Pelosi's tweet that really, I think it epitomized the position that Democrats hold about the whole criminal justice system, the legal system, when it pertains to people they just simply don't like. Nancy Pelosi tweeted, "The grand jury has acted upon the facts and the law. No one is above the law, and everyone has the right to a trial to prove innocence." That's not how our system works. But that's how folks like Nancy Pelosi view the system, while maintaining a posture claiming that the left is rightly calling out a broken and racist justice system. It is quite remarkable. I don't even want to call it a disturbing position, even though I view it as disturbing, but it's dangerous. It's as laughable as it is dangerous. Like, I'm of two minds. On the one hand, I want to just laugh in Nancy Pelosi's face and say, how do you not know this? How do you get to become 112 years old and not know that it's innocent until proven guilty, not the other way around? Like, there's some humor in all of it. But then it's also dangerous. It's terrifying. Because to folks like Nancy Pelosi and so many other Democrats who are in positions of power and influence, amplified by the media, they believe it's the reverse. They believe that you are guilty if they deem it so, and it's up to you to prove that you are not. That the burden is on the defendant, not the prosecution. And that's how they treated the Trump presidency. The second he took office, they were saying, we're going to get him because he's guilty. Of what? Well, we'll figure it out. Of what? Well, we'll just wait and see. We'll find something that we're going to be able to jump on. And when you treat people like that, again, regardless of one's political position, when you treat anyone like that, it's really easy to see how much a system can be abused and how people's rights just completely go out the window. Jonathan Turley is a brilliant lawyer. He's a George Washington University law professor. He's also on Fox News. And he pointed out how weak this indictment is.
First of all, it's a federal crime. The Department of Justice chose not to prosecute. Bragg's own predecessor declined to prosecute. But he is attempting to bootstrap that federal crime into a state case. And if that is the basis for the indictment, I think it's rather outrageous. I think it's legally pathetic.
Legally pathetic. And yet, for some, it's being celebrated. And I told you on The View they would celebrate it. That's exactly what they did Sunny Hostin, who's a lawyer, somehow has no clue what in the world she's talking about. It is remarkable that I know more about the law than Sunny Hostin does. Seriously, did she forget everything when she became a co-host on The View? It is astonishing. But they are laughing about it. Morning Joe's happy. Chris Hayes, oh my God, this was a wet dream for him. Rachel Maddow says, oh, I gave up my show for this. I'm coming back. I'm excited. But they don't understand that when one side abuses a system, you pretty much guarantee that the other side is also going to abuse the system, and they're going to come after you. And you put people like me in a tough spot because I don't want to see the system be abused by Republicans. I also don't want it to see abused by Democrats. And yet, if this is the game you're going to play, what else can the left or what else can the right do in response? If we had a serious president, he would come out and call all of this for what it is, a political, clearly political lawsuit. It is fueled by politics. It's fueled by a hatred for a man because they think that this is somehow going to hurt him. It's going to hurt his campaign, they believe, and they certainly know that the history books will be written with their names in it as taking down this corrupt president. But they're not seeing the forest for the trees, and they don't understand what it is they're doing. And if Republicans don't abuse the system the way that the Democrats have, then the Democrats are just going to do it again because, well, they suffered no consequences the first time. The president could do the right thing and bring this country together like he said he was going to. I'm going to be the unifier in chief. He lied because all he's done is try to divide people. He's one of the most divisive presidents in our lifetime because we're at a point in our lifetime where the politics are driving people apart. But he could say something he's choosing not to. Now, ultimately, a judge, when this is challenged, and it will be challenged, a judge will have to step forward and do the right thing, do the brave thing, given the context in which, you know, anytime you do anything that the left doesn't want you to do, the far fringes of the left will go ahead and come for you, literally march outside of your home threatening you. But if that doesn't happen, obviously Trump can't get a fair trial in New York, not Manhattan. He's not going to go to jail for any of this, but you find him guilty on any of this? A jury does? You've just completely destroyed our system. And there are consequences to that. Political, social, legal. Just from a society standpoint, when you don't have any sense that the legal system is fair and just and objective, I'm terrified of what could come of that and decisions people might make. The lawlessness that could occur after they come to that conclusion. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show.